Hello and welcome to Talking Architects. I'm your host, Matt Deacon. While I was at the ITA conference in New York, I met up with Angela Yocum, an IT executive with a large multinational, and started off by asking her how she became involved with ITA and how she became an ITA fellow.
I became aware of ITA maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. Became involved at the local chapter level in Atlanta, Georgia, where I was a leader of several architecture practices for a large bank. I quickly learned that there was tremendous value in the local community to not only to myself, but also to me, but also to my the folks who were on the various teams that I led. So we quickly all engaged in the localized chapter. As I learned about opportunities to contribute to the general body of knowledge that ITA is compiling about architecture, I quickly became involved in that that body of knowledge generation. As I did that, Paul Price was kind enough to recognize my contributions with an ITA fellowship.
So, fantastic.
And it goes to, you know, what a great vehicle ITA is for the individual architect or the architect lead to become a contributor to the community and to the general body of knowledge that we all enjoy.
Broad agreement there, absolutely. And I guess I know you have a senior role in your day job,
yes.
A technical or an architectural role.
I do.
And I guess with that comes a lot of responsibility. I guess
it
is. What would be interesting, and certainly from your talk that you gave earlier on, this idea of architects as business partners really struck a chord with me. Everybody talks about business IT alignment and those sort of concepts, and IT people are always trying to become more savvy of what the business is doing, and I think never more so than over the last year or so that people have really realised their jobs and livelihoods depend on this understanding. And I think you said a lot of things that were very insightful. Just on that, business partners, and what are you actually saying there? Could you kind of paraphrase what?
Certainly. So, you're right. I am an IT executive in a very large multinational company. I am responsible for not only the many architecture practices, but also several large development teams and operational responsibility as well. What I've found is that not only in this role, but in roles that are even more classically focused around architecture, we cannot afford to be order takers. In fact, we are doing our businesses a disservice if we wait to be told how to engage by folks who may be entrenched within a line of business, a specific line of business in our companies. Architects are uniquely positioned to see opportunities that cross organizational boundaries, line of business boundaries, and they are typically sophisticated enough to recognize opportunity that may not be obvious to anyone else. They are then positioned and qualified to behave as business leaders, as business partners, rather than as a technology function executor.
And I know that for a fact. You see these, I've called them either dark matter or dark gaps, the gaps between different bits of ownership, and I think I've been frustrated personally, and I've seen it elsewhere, that you have a lack of empowerment to do that. Now you're saying that actually you do, you know, innate in the role you do.
How do you
arrive at securing that empowerment? I guess how do you kind of take ownership was another thing you said specifically. How do you take ownership where ownership doesn't exist? You know, in those dark spaces between those points of responsibility across those business boundaries.
So there are different types of authority that we enjoy within, that everyone enjoys within a large corporation. And one source of authority is organizational. And you're right. In many cases, architects have not been anointed as having the role that I just described a moment ago. The interesting thing is, what I've found over time is that knowledge tends to be power.
Right,
I think someone said that once upon a time. And the architect's knowledge and perspective into a company, the company's inner workings, let's hope the architects have also taken the time to understand how the business works and what the important things are to
Let's come their back business, to that. Understanding their business. I like. Yes.
We'll come back to that. And once that is done, what I find is authority follows very naturally. I think also key is the architect's behavior has to be one has to achieve ownership. So, for example, architects, in fact, several that I've talked to in the last couple of days, often say, well, I saw this train wreck coming, and I knew it was going to happen. And my response to that is, well, why didn't you take control of the situation? You're a senior. Most architects enjoy some senior position in their company. They may be individual contributors, but they're typically not low-banded, very junior folks. They're fairly senior folks, and the expectation, certainly by the executive management and leadership, I would suppose, would be that they step up, take control of whatever the train wreck situation is, and avert the disaster. Now, it's not only an ownership of things that may be going terribly wrong in a disaster-like situation.
Often is. It may start with that.
But just taking ownership and championing activities within the organization that that no one else has either recognized or acknowledged or stepped up and owned. Architects, there's nothing stopping architects from saying, I would like to fill this gap in the enterprise by chartering and owning this set of activities. And here's the cost justification for this activity.
So as long as it's moving from the reactive situation, which is the train crash or train wreck, to being proactive, of actually seeing, well, how do we avoid these potential for these things in the future, and actually, rather than focusing on the negatives, actually looking towards creating positive advancements or improvements in innovation, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's back to that ownership question. And I guess, if you see the opportunity, it's grabbing it, and you might be surprised by how quickly people will allow you to take ownership of that.
I have seen time and time again.
And there's no excuse for saying, it's not my responsibility. If you're seeing it, you have to react to it.
I spoke to someone here at this conference yesterday who said to me, when I see behavior that I don't agree with, or I see a direction being taken that I do not support, I will not sign off on it. Mm-hmm. I don't put my name on it, and it goes forward and it happens without my approval.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, okay, good for you. You can perhaps sleep at night in terms of not having your name associated with something bad. Mm-hmm. But if you're being paid by a company to do the right thing for that company, you need to have the sophistication to understand when something is okay to do and when something is not okay to do, and also have the persuasive powers and the case-making capabilities to convince your peers and those in other positions of authority in the company.
That's right. It's not enough to highlight the problem. It's to seek the solution.
Correct.
So, I've been guilty of this many a time, of pointing out the problem, but not actually sitting down and necessarily have worked through, well, how do I mitigate it? How do we solve that ahead of it happening? And I think a lot of people do say, I won't sign to that, and then walk away and absolve themselves of responsibility. But I think that in of itself, they are ultimately responsible for the outcome, even if they don't sign that piece of paper or whatever. I perhaps listed loads of quotes when you were talking. You're a very quotable person, I guess. But you said one great thing, and it relates to this. And I'm not quite sure I understand it, so I'd like to understand it. Don't confuse rank with authority. So it's the same. It's all in the same area.
Right.
But could you just explain, clarify that statement?
So I heard that statement from someone who used to be a military police officer.
It's a quote of a quote of a quote.
It's a quote of a quote, and I've misused it. And he used to have to explain you know, the difference to the folks he was, you know, either stopping for some traffic violation or other, you know, he would say, please do not confuse your rank with my authority. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't recommend that architects actually say that in the workplace. That's not probably not a good approach. But it is important to understand that if you have harnessed an authority within the organization, either through having it bestowed upon you organizationally, which doesn't happen as often as it maybe should, or through the personal influence that you've gained, or the ownership that you've taken of key programs, of key enablers for your enterprise, then you should wield that authority and that power fearlessly. Your job as a senior member of IT staff is to do the right thing for the company. Now, the other thing I want to say, I spoke, as you mentioned, yesterday here, and had a chance to get some feedback from folks who are attendees. And a couple of folks came back to me and said, oh, you know, as we manage the adoption of our future state technology environment definition, and as we drive that adoption, I've taken away from your talk that we're going to, push, and I'm not going to compromise, I'm not going to allow tactical or non-strategic solutions to make their way into the environment anymore. Mm. And what I cautioned the folks about was, well, now, again, it's important that you understand your business enough to know when to take on some level of what's been called technical debt. Mm. And understand when that's okay to deviate from perhaps the future state, the ideal future state technology, in an effort to, you know, go after a revenue opportunity that may only be there for the next, 2 to 3 months. Mm. The revenue upside may be so great that it justifies taking on some technical debt that needs to be paid off over time. So there's, again, that's part of the understanding of the business. I'm not encouraging people to take a blind, hard line, but...
Absolutely. And, part of that sort of not walking away and seeking a solution is that trading of short... in tactical versus long-term strategic. So I certainly agree with that. And I think in order to do that, you mentioned, that you may result in some economic benefits in the short term for the organisation. So it's back to that kind of point of realising what your business does. And it's beyond business IT alignment to actually going, business is, or IT is the business in that sense, which is another quote or misquote, I apologise. But... It's once again too easy to forget. Actually, what does your what does your organisation do in delivering? What's the product or service?
Right.
And if you, I tend to find if you put yourself in that position, then it's easier to make those trade-off decisions and manage that debt.
Exactly.
I guess there's not a question there actually, but I guess how do you actually start to realise what your role is in the business? To deliver the business value.
Very nice, very good question. So one thing that I encourage people to do, and in fact, oftentimes is in the context of a technology, either an architect or another technology person, reaching out to business community members and saying, can I sit down with you? Can I understand your business? That typically doesn't work well. The business leaders are very busy people, and getting a phone call that says, I would like to sit down with you so that I can understand your needs and better serve you is not something that they typically welcome. That sounds almost like some of the sales calls I get from vendors. And, we all know that's not necessarily well received, although for some reason it's a technique that continually gets used and reused and reused. So I encourage the technology, the architect, to say, instead of asking for time with their business partners as step one, ask for that as your last step. Do your research. There are some good search engines available to us that we can use to find out all sorts of things that have been published about our businesses that are publicly available information. If you're a relatively senior resource in your large company and you haven't read every bit of that information you need your hands on, you're doing yourself and your company a disservice. There's some great context to be gained by just looking at public information. So that's probably step one. Step two would be looking around at the internal documentation and internal blogs and anything else that you can get your hands on that will help you understand the current thinking, not only for your enterprise as a whole, but in the various lines of business that you may be serving. And I would say this probably goes is good advice not only for the corporate IT architect, but also for those who are contractors that are engaging. So getting your hands on that sort of information, again, helps you expand your context. And then as you look at it through the lens of the information that we see as internal IT folks, then the gaps start becoming more evident. In fact, Grady Boosh said something fabulous in his, in his talk this morning. But one of them was, there's great value in simplification.
Amplification as well, didn't he?
Amplification, that's right.
I love that.
It's amplification through simplification, I believe is what he said. And the simplification can be achieved after you do a little research, understanding what your business does. What are the motivations of your lines of business, as far as you can tell, based on public information and privately available information that's freely available within your company. Looking at that with an IT lens, all of a sudden things start to line up, or should start to line up for you. It's that in the areas that perhaps are areas of opportunity will be amplified by that view that is ultimately simple once you line it up. At that point, reaching out to a business partner and saying, hey, in the context of X, Y, and Z, how do you feel, what are your personal motivations for, whatever. I mean, you can have a more personal conversation. You can find out a little bit more about what may not be obvious based on your research, but you have some context for that conversation. You're not coming in cold.
Yes, that's right. You're not going in saying, what do you do, and how can I help? You're actually going in, yes, you're acting a bit more mature, aren't you? You're acting as a consultant or a business partner. Back to that sort of that statement, so it's pretty nice. I guess we could have finished there, but I do want to touch on the one other thing you covered, which was understanding your business value to the organisation from a revenue even base, or at least the economic contribution you make to an organisation as an IT professional of any scale, I guess. But in your case, being executive level, I think you need to be able to articulate that very clearly. But I think actually all of us do. So how would you go about converting, yourself from being a cost center to being a profit center?
Right. Well, I think we take a page from the playbook that has been followed by our business partners for years. We look at, first of all, the analysis that has been done across the various lines of business that we interact with as technology enablers. And we can see, in many cases, how our engagement leads directly to revenue recognition that has been monitored elsewhere, and that was key to that revenue recognition. We can talk also in terms of cost avoidance, which we can use past, plenty of historical data to predict.
Where did you go to get that data, though? You said it's there, but offhand.
So that's a good point. It may not be there. Maybe it's anecdotal at best, but there is information typically in most organizations. Maybe it's anecdotal, maybe it's tribal knowledge, but there is some data that is presumably defensible that you can use to describe how things usually go when executed a certain way, and use that to predict how much you could have expected to have something cost, or how quickly you would have been able to do something otherwise, or not quickly as the case may be, if another path had been taken. So cost avoidance is another thing that shouldn't be ignored.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's fascinating. I mean, we could continue. I think, it's always fascinating talking to you, and thanks very much for your time.
It's my pleasure.
Whatever.